Pussy.
All right, it's time for Truth About Markets with Max and Stacy here at Resonance 104.4. I'm Max Kaiser. I'm here with Stacy Herbert. We're here for the next hour. They're going to talk about the same stuff we talked about last week and the week before that and the week before that. The financial market crisis by the frickin' terrorists on Wall Street. Stacy?
Well, the terrorists on Wall Street are aided and abetted by the U.S. government. The Treasury.
Yeah.
And also the Federal Reserve Bank, which is a secret cabal of bankers. Actually, they're not so secret because they're kind of out in the open, aren't they?
They got this bill in Congress, right? They're going to audit the Fed. Tell the people.
Well, the Ron Paul, Alan Grayson amendment to the financial, this new financial bill that passed through Congress, this amendment passed, which would facilitate the auditing of the Fed. Now, it has to pass the Senate.
Yeah.
And that goes to vote, I guess, just after Thanksgiving, which is this week.
Oh, yeah.
So, I guess next week it goes to the Senate.
We don't have Thanksgiving here in France, in Paris, France, do we? We don't have that whole holiday. We got the Beaujolais Nouveau instead.
Exactly. And how much better is that?
You get all the Beaujolais Nouveau you can drink for a dollar.
All you could drink for very cheap, and you don't end up as fat as eating a whole bunch of mashed potatoes, stuffing, and turkey, and cranberry sauce. But I have to tell you, on Thanksgiving, I did like the day after Thanksgiving. Remember those sandwiches? You'd have a turkey sandwich with a little bit of stuffing and cranberry sauce on it.
It sounds like one of those Roland Emmerich films. The day after Thanksgiving, everyone explodes, and then the planet explodes, and then it's a huge tsunami of gravy that comes rolling on shore, and the White House gets bombed by a giant can of cranberry preserves, and could be his next film after 2012.
It's also a big day in America. It's Black Friday, they call it, don't they? Where the shops go into the black. Like manic stampede of shopping every the Friday after Thanksgiving, which is on the third Thursday of every November.
It's Black Friday. This is the big shopping day. People, typically, they will line up, early in the morning to storm the stores and to pick up this year's latest must-have Christmas toy made in Bangladesh or Vietnam or China by some kids that will never see Christmas in their entire life with their face down in the mud making little tricks for American babies. And it's the Black Friday because, I think it has to do with the fact that up until then, the retail business is mostly operating in the red. And now starting that week or this week or next week, and they start to make some money, and it's a big lead up to Santa Claus comes around with the reindeers and climbs down the chimney and smokes everybody's dope and then runs away. And isn't that the way it goes? Isn't that the way it goes?
I never heard of that. But, honey, you should also look at, while we record this, if you can look on here, you can see the time. But you can also see the size of our amplitude of our conversation.
Yeah, so amplitude is good.
So you can see that I talk a lot louder than you, I speak a lot closer to the mic.
Oh, yeah.
But we have had complaints from MEP, who said, or maybe it was Mongo, said
who
that.
Who the hell are Mongo and MEP?
These are people who comment on our comments board.
Oh, really?
But they say that sometimes they can't hear Max.
Well, that's because I'm mumbling,
You do mumble, but you also mumble very far away from the mic.
All right, how's this?
You don't have to go too close.
How's this? My normal mumble amplitude.
That's right.
Is it good? I mean, this is performance art. This is on Resonance 104.4. It's art. It's not some frickin' radio show you might find on some other station. This is art, baby. This is performance art. That's why we do it completely naked. And Stacy's got a can of Hershey's chocolate syrup being poured over her right now from her head. It's dripping down her body. I'm sitting in a vat of honey. And we're doing the show as kind of a Sunday, a human Sunday radio program, art installation.
Oh, a sundae with an AE at the end.
Yeah, talk about cherries. I'm looking at two right now, baby. Two little cherries.
So, you know, the good news is that apparently global warming or climate change is not happening anymore because of...
Well,
there was some email from a scientist who said he, you know, the database of some East Anglia university was hacked. And there was some scientist who had said he had massaged some of the figures from, I guess, Paleolithic times. You know, they were trying to...
Pele? He's still playing soccer?
But, so... The Cumbrian floods, you know, 14 inches of rain in 24 hours that wiped away practically a whole town.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that today, what, November 21st.
Bocastle, remember that one?
Bocastle, but today is November 21st, and we were walking around in our tank tops and summer trousers here in Paris. But these are all just normal now. It's not
the new normal.
It's not considered anything extreme. Just keep on walking. Just keep walking.
I guess,
don't stop. Don't look.
Prelude to a talk about global warming.
No. Because we have a lot of stuff. We were talking about the Federal Reserve being
we can put that on audited. Hold, you know.
We're talking about the increase in calls in the U.S. for Timothy Geithner to step down. So I guess, you know, this is the prelude to the next year's elections. You know, many people are up for re-election.
We're in America?
Yes.
Yeah.
In Congress. Oh, so yeah. This is probably why you're seeing Congress people actually betray the masters in Washington and vote for auditing the Fed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I guess the Democrats are going to lose their majority in Congress, I guess, huh?
Who knows? You know, well, they're all the same, right? I mean, we're going to get the Republicans. Ooh, you know what? They just voted to allow credit card companies in America to charge whatever interest rate they want and to make sure they can, before new legislation comes in next year, they're making sure that credit card companies can raise it even higher than 30%. So,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but didn't gold just hit a new high last week?
Exactly. Well, I mean, I don't see, like... In America,
so who cares?
Well, that's right. But so, I'm just saying, okay, you know, yeah. we'll be presented with like, yeah, Obama and Democrats are out. Yeehaw! We have the red-colored debt, you know, enslavement instead. That's the color we prefer because we're little children who like bright colors, primary colors.
I like the color gold and silver, and as I've been saying on this show for 5 years or however long it's been, when gold is back trading at $350 an ounce, that systemic collapse was coming, currency crisis was coming, that then in 2007, the world hit peak credit, and we've been in deflation ever since, which is causing systemic breakdown in the financial sector, in the banking sector, which is forcing people like central banks and hedge funds and rich people to move aggressively into gold and silver bullion, and the price reflects that. And I got a topic for you. I want to return to my master theory, my grand unified inflation deflation theory.
Okay.
What do you think about that?
I think you should tell the people. And I before you go on to that, I want to make sure to remind you that we need to talk about the big story that happened in London on Friday. And this has to do with gold and inflation deflation, and that was a bizarre event on the dollar exchange via London. So.
Oh yeah, yeah, I remember. Let's talk about that.
Well, okay. So then we're from here. We're going to talk about Max Keiser's grand unified inflation deflation theory.
Yeah, and then keep that other thing in mind. That spike on Friday in the dollar. Keep that in mind. So you got the grand unified inflation deflation story. So let's see. I've been working on this since I first introduced it a few weeks ago. And what I got now is you've got real deflation and fake inflation. Now, on the comment boards for our site at maxkeiser.com, you know, we interviewed Mike Shedlock on one of our shows this past week. Either it was the On the Edge or the Keiser Report. I don't remember which one. I think it was On the Edge.
It was On the Edge, Max.
Right. And we interviewed Mike Shedlock, and he's a deflationist and He's talking about deflation, talking about the collapse of the Japanese yen, etc. And, of course, the comments were from people on the comment board saying, what are you talking deflation? The price of food is up. The price of tuition is up. The price of energy is up. I see inflation. I see inflation. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? Well, you have to understand the grand inflation deflation unified theory. You have to understand that the macro, compared to everything else, you could say the macro trend is deflation. The macro trend is the globe hit peak credit in 2007 when Chuck Prince over there at Citigroup said, as long as the music keeps playing, we're going to keep dancing. And then that was the top. He hit the top, and then he left as CEO, and he's out golfing somewhere, sitting on his hundreds of millions of dollars for having overseen one of the biggest Ponzi scams in history. And we hit peak credit in 2007, in the summer of 2007. And credit's been drying up since. Even though base money has expanded, the larger money aggregates have been falling because banks are not lending, because there is deflationary economic collapse occurring around the world. In the U.S., unemployment is zooming higher. Foreclosures just hit a new high. Commercial real estate is the next huge real estate bubble to collapse. You're talking about not only about abandoned houses, now they're talking about abandoned buildings. And this is going to cause another hundreds of billions of dollars and trillions of dollars worth of fresh bailout money and subsidies and backstop guarantees from the various central banks, including the Fed, including the Bank of England, ECB, etc. And it won't have any effect this time either. There's no way that you can stop this deflationary spiral from moving out of control. Now, within the deflationary spiral, you have people, hedge fund managers, professional investors, professional speculators, bankers, Wall Street bankers, who are playing the dollar carry trade and various other carry trades, where they're borrowing dollars for 0% interest, investing in Australian dollars at 4 or 5% interest, or they're borrowing in dollars for 0% interest, and they're investing in gold and silver and other commodities and making some money that way, which is causing a mirage, if you will, of higher prices for food and higher prices for energy. But that is the result of dollar carry trade speculation. That's not the macroeconomic trend. If you can't look at those rising prices and say that's an evidence of inflation. This is where I disagree with Jim Poplava, who after his very good and thorough 5-part weekly series on the inflation versus deflation debate, and he had great guests on supporting both arguments. At the end of the all this, I believe he came down on the side of inflation because his anecdotal evidence of being, well, you know, there's rising prices at the grocery store and that just feels like inflation. It's unfortunately that is not the macro trend. That's nestled within the much bigger deflationary collapse. And surprisingly, we are seeing both weakness in the dollar and a rise in gold, even though the trend is deflation. You'd expect those two things to be going in the opposite direction. But since we are entering this, you need to have the grand unified inflation-deflation theory to understand all the ins and outs, the inputs and the outputs, to understand exactly what's going on. Now, to give an example of why this all works and you need the grand unified inflation-deflation theory to understand it, tell the people about what you were talking about. Friday, we had the big spike. Talk.
Well, Friday here in London, the ICE exchange was shut down.
The International
C Exchange.
Currency exchange.
Well, the dollar spiked by 9% in the course of a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is something that we've been actually warning about for the last 3 or 4 weeks, both here and on our Truth About Markets New Zealand show in particular, because New Zealand is often a recipient of the carry trade. At the moment, the dollar carry trade is mostly going into Brazil and Brazilian markets and the real.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the danger of the carry trade is everybody's making the same exact bet. And, you know, many hedge funds and mostly hedge funds are, are making hundreds of billions of dollars in bets by borrowing in the U.S. dollar, so basically selling the U.S. dollar to invest in higher yielding currencies or higher yielding equities in places like Brazil. Mm. Now, if interest rates go up, or there's a, if the dollar goes up in value, see, they only make a carry trade bet when they're pretty certain that for a very long time, the dollar is going to continue to fall, slowly fall, at least.
At least for a few hours.
Yeah. Well, exactly. But these carry trades have a habit of very unwinding very fast, because so many people are borrowing in dollars and selling the dollars. There, it's all a one-way bet. So when it comes time to try to unwind the trade, if there's something that happens that they need to unwind the trade, everybody's trying to buy the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nobody to sell to.
That's right.
So, so this is what could have happened on Friday. We don't know, because the International Currency Exchange here in London has not revealed what exactly happened.
Mm-hmm.
But Zero Hedge has some of the newer details, where it looks like 14,000 contracts were canceled, annulled, people who made trades based on this dollar move.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the people who actually wrote on Zero Hedge website, one guy had lost $4,500. Well, he thought he made $4,500.
Yeah.
Because he sold his contracts at $0.79. But it went, he had it taken from him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But they're not revealing who made this big trade. Why the dollar spiked by 9%?
Right, right. Yeah, I've heard some interesting stories about this.
What stories did you have? I'm sure that, like, it ranges from just a mere technical glitch to a plunge protection team fraud.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you had the reciprocal drop in gold to go along with your spike in the dollar.
Not a 9% drop.
You had a drop that. I'm sorry, you had a drop. You had a
and you had a big drop, a big drop in the S&P.
And it gets back to what we've been talking about for a few weeks now. The short positions on these various metal exchanges, either it's COMEX or the London Metals Exchange, and they are short physical commodity. They've sold more gold than they have in the vaults. And so every month that gold closes higher, they have to take some losses. And the idea is to drop the price of gold by, of course, goosing the dollar, because you can manipulate the price of the dollar a lot easier at this stage of the game than you can the price of gold. And this is one of the great things about gold, and this is why they should have a gold-backed currency, is that it doesn't mean you can't manipulate markets. It just means it's harder to manipulate markets. Even as manipulated as the price of gold has been over the years, it's still not as manipulated as the dollar and the bond contract, the currency markets, the stock market, and just about every other market out there are so manipulated that it's the manipulation itself has become the business model, to wit, Goldman Sachs and their high-frequency trading. Their model is to manipulate markets. They don't have a business model in the sense that they manufacture something for a nickel and sell it for a dime. You know, that concept of making a profit based on labor costs and manufacturing costs and marketing costs and this type of thing. That's so 20th century or 19th century or even 18th century. That's not the way banks on Wall Street make money. They make money by gaming the system, manipulating markets, influencing lawmakers to give them huge tax abatements, tax loopholes, subsidies, backstops, etc. That's their business. So to manipulate the dollar, as was done on Friday morning, is kind of like that scene in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, where they blow up the railway car, and then it blows up spectacularly, and I think Butch says to Sundance, "Gee, Sundance, you think you used enough dynamite this time?"
Yeah.
You know, because he blew it, and he blew all the money, and he blew the railway car. And this is, just happens about 5 seconds before the guys in the black hat show up and start following him throughout the rest of the movie. So the algorithms used to manipulate currencies, they put in like a triple dose on Friday morning because they really wanted, it's a, I believe it was an expiration date for options on Friday. So they really wanted to get that gold price down. So they put in the supercharged algorithm to blast the dollar up significantly, but they goosed it too high. It was obviously fraud, and the exchange canceled all those Forex trades. And you saw a dollar take a bit of a dip, but you know that, I'm sorry, you saw the gold take a bit of a dip, but you know, gold is operating now under what we call the Beijing put. There are people sitting on the bid. There are banks, central banks. There are hedge funds. There are large, wealthy people sitting on the bid. They're just saying, like, any gold that comes in over the exchange at 1,050 or 1,030 or 1,020, whatever might case be, I'm a buyer. I myself, I'm qualifying that position. I've got my buy stops, my order is set. You know, I'm a buyer at certain prices because it's like the stock market in 1983, you know, or 84. It's anytime it comes in, you got to buy the dips. It's going to $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 an ounce. I'm sorry, but
you buy the dips in a bull market. Yeah. You don't buy the dips in a bear market.
You buy the dips in a bull market, and gold's in a bull market. And the dollar is in a bear market. The trend is down. It's heading toward oblivion. Of course, there's going to be, it's not a straight line, but, and it's completely manipulated like this, but they did it. They just run successful. So you saw the price of gold. Not only did it recover all the losses it made as a result of the manipulation of the Forex, but it closed on an uptick. It closed, I think, at 1150 or something, another new all-time high.
Yes, but the other thing to worry about from this move on Friday in the dollar, the 9% jump, was that, you know, obviously these governments or somebody had to step in and cancel those contracts and force the dollar back down, because the U.S. is encouraging the dollar carry trade, just as Japan, during their deflation of the past 20 years, has encouraged the yen carry trade. So the dollar carry trade, if the dollar jumped to 79 on the index from 70, I think it was 75, it would have caused an even bigger short squeeze. Because imagine all those people with positions in borrowed dollars suddenly have a 9% jump, and magnified by the loss, it would have magnified and leveraged their losses.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you could have seen the dollar, if they didn't stop it, the dollar could have risen by 20% because of a dollar unwind, a carry trade unwind.
Yeah, that's right. But you are just not seeing that squeeze develop. Even when the thing took off at that level, what we saw, in other words, they're testing the waters. If gold had dropped 9%, commensurately with the dollar, they would have effectively smashed all those sell stops on the gold contract, and gold would be back under $1,000 by the end of Friday. But the people who own gold, you're in a boxing match, and you throw that left jab out there to kind of see what kind of damage you can do, and set your right hand, you know, cross the face knockout punch. And this dollar move on Friday was just a jab to see. The gold buyers, are they serious? Are they strong hands? Are they really going to hold on to this stuff? Or are they just flighty little retail ponces who are going to dump at the second of the any sign of a trouble? And now all this did was it just strengthened the resolve of gold holders who are now going to say, well, you know, we took that punch. You tried to throw us off our game with that incredible fake out. It didn't work. We're still buying. So I think it's going to set up further weakness in the dollar.
But it also, I just think it shows you that rather than being less unstable or less precarious, our global financial system is even far more precarious and unstable today than it was last year at this time. When, remember, markets were tumbling and Hank Paulson was holding up Congress.
And where was the price of gold at this time last year?
It fell.
But on an absolute basis, the price was? 26% lower. And over that period of time, it's risen something like 26%, and it's going to rise another 26% and another 50% and another 100% and another 200%. Because the deflationary trend, the spiral, the collapse, the banking Minsky moment of Austrian economical collapse is upon us. This is it. We are now heading to the bottom of Davy Jones' locker. These banks are going to declare bankruptcy in a way that would make last year look tame by comparison. Wells Fargo is technically bankrupt. That means that Warren Buffett has a huge loss on his hands. He has to come clean at some point, Warren Buffett. You know, him and Paulson came out last week and said, oh, they're going to put $500 million.
Not Paulson. It was Lloyd Blankfein.
Lloyd Blankfein at Goldman Sachs. They said, we're going to put $500 million toward some, you know, stimulation program of the economy.
They're going to give loans to small businesses.
You know, that is exactly like when you go to Las Vegas and you lose your shirt and then they give you a free breakfast. You know, just so you don't blow the place up. It's just, they're just trying to buy people's acquiescence. They're trying to buy people's calmness. They're figuring that, look, if we don't throw them a bone, they're going to blow our heads off. And they're saying, okay, here's $500 million, you idiots. You know, keep cool. Everything's great. We're going to make record bonuses this year. And my net worth is now in the $50 billion range. And you've got no job, and you've got no wages, and you've lost the entire franchise as a citizen, but here's 10 cents. It's like Rockefeller giving away dimes on the street is the equivalent adjusted for inflation.
Yeah. Well, you brought up casinos, and I want to mention two things, and that's the lesson to be learned on from Friday's 9% dollar move is that it is a casino, and the house always wins. And the house wins if you engage in the trade. If you start trading, which not only Goldman Sachs is front running every single trade, but if you try to, outguess the market, and the market's manipulated, so you can't do it. They're going to position themselves against you. They're going to take your money no matter what. So I think you just have to stay firm. We're going to have massive volatility, I believe, over the next year or two. You're just going to see wild swings all over the place, 10% moves in a day on, you know, in all markets, whether the dollar, gold, the Dow, the FTSE, they're all going to have wild swings.
Yeah, no, that's something we've been talking about that would be a trend for this year and certainly next year, is that the volatility is going to increase wildly. These 10% swings are going to become more normal. So you'll see the Dow Jones swinging 2,000 to 3,000 points at a clip. You'll see the dollar swinging 9% as we did on Friday. That's an unbelievable move for a market that trades $3.5 trillion worth of forex trades every single day. So you've got a 9% move in one day. You know, remember that the American GDP is something like $12 trillion. So every four to five days, the entire market GDP of America is turned over in the forex market. And you've got a 9% swing in a day. This, you know, the U.S. economy itself, you won't know day to day whether the GDP is worth $13 trillion, $5 trillion, $20 trillion, $7 trillion. You won't know day to day. It's going to be like you're in it's a Bermuda Triangle phase of the economy. All the instruments used to determine how the economy is doing, the money supply, the money speed, the earnings numbers, the trade numbers, the budget numbers, the deficit numbers are all going to be spinning in wildly opposite directions.
The other thing I want to say is Goldman Sachs, to bring it back to them, and that is regarding this 9% dollar move. Now, remember last year, we hypothesized that we would see billionaires versus millionaires, this war between them. This year, because so many trillions of dollars were created by the U.S. government for a few select bankers, I think you're starting to see the trillionaires versus the billionaires. So remember, Goldman Sachs wiped out SEM Group, the largest pipeline owner in America, the huge oil company last year. They wiped them out. They wiped out Amaranth Hedge Fund. And that was via, you could think of Goldman Sachs as kind of a hyena. They scavenge other people's gains and their positions. They don't actually look for investments themselves. They just take it from other people. Mm-hmm. They take their kill. So they just wipe out. They wiped out so many oil trading hedge funds last year. Now this year, hedge funds are playing the dollar carry trade. So you're going to see a Goldman wiping out. You're going to see these dollar moves, erratic moves, as Goldman wipes out hedge fund after hedge fund and takes them.
Yeah, well, they did that with subprime, didn't they?
Yeah, exactly. So you always have to look to what the trillionaires are doing at this stage of the war. Remember, we wiped out all the millionaires, right? Mm-hmm. That was last year's war was billionaires versus millionaires. The millionaires are wiped out. Their money has been taken and given up to the billionaires, and now the trillionaire class. The trillionaires are going to wipe out some of the billionaires.
Mm. And the net result of all this, as we've been saying, well, of course, the volatility will increase. There's about $600 trillion in derivative contracts out there. I believe the volume of derivatives trading over the past 12 months is in the quadrillion level.
Yeah.
So this trillionaire number is accurate if you consider that the volume of derivatives trading is in the quadrillions. And you've got the volatility increasing. You've got no regulatory framework. There's no laws. It's a fiat currency. It's a fractional reserve system. But, you know, the people who are long-term wealthy people whose wealth goes back hundreds of years know when it's time to buy gold. And that's you see it in the price of gold. You know, they're just saying, look, I mean, it's time to just take all the money we made trading this funny currency nonsense and to convert that into gold while the gold is still trading under $2,000 an ounce.
Well, yeah, well, they're actually, the very wealthy people are actually taking physical delivery. And that's because why would you want digital wealth? Because one of two people is going to take it, either the government or Goldman Sachs. And they're kind of the same thing, but you leave yourself open to being manipulated your wealth away by Goldman Sachs.
Well, you're in a power position, because if you're a dictator or you're a would-be congressman or you want to start a company and I've got tons of gold, you know, you become the place people come to lobby. They lobby the gold owners. They don't lobby the politicians or the banksters. They lobby the people with the gold. So there's a lot of power with gold. You remember, it was only four years ago, not even, when you would read press reports in the financial press and in the mainstream media talking, you know, laughing at gold, saying, why would anyone want this worthless gold? It has no value. It has no industrial value. It's the barbarous relic. And they were mocking gold. You know, that's how bad gold's reputation had gotten. You know, I saw a video the other day, which was kind of funny. This guy, he had a 1 ounce Krugerrand or Maple Leaf or something. And he was going up to people on the street and saying, I've got here 1 ounce of pure gold, and I'd like to sell it to you for $50.
Yes, I was one of Alex Jones's producers. He went around the street and nobody nobody would offer him, give him the $50 for the ounce of gold.
Yeah, nobody knew that. They were looking at $1,100 worth of gold being offered to them for $50. They had no idea what the price of gold is. Now, when you read these stories, for example, you will see this occasionally that, well, you know, there's a bubble in gold because it's become, you know, the contrarian bet is that you got to go against the crowd, and the crowd is just plowing their way into gold. That is so far from the truth, it's absurd. It's got to be less than one half of 0.25% of Americans own any gold. I mean, that's absurd. When you think about 40 to 50%, depending on how you make the calculation, of Americans own stocks, and those stocks are all going to now be, you know, they've had 10 straight years of going absolutely nowhere in value, and they're going to go nowhere for another 10 years, you know. Less than 0.25%, or, you know, something along those lines, has any gold whatsoever. So all you need to do is get that number up to 5% of Americans, or 10% of Americans, and 10% of Europeans, and the rest of the world owning gold, and that's how you get the gold 5,000. There's only 150,000 tons of it. There's only about $3.5 trillion worth of it in existence in the globe today. And not only did we hit peak credit and peak oil, but we hit peak gold.
I want to ask you one other thing about this casinos and trillionaires versus billionaires. And that's this article that I just saw in today's Herald Tribune. And the headline goes something along the lines of, banks scour online poker sites for new hires. So they're looking on poker sites, online poker sites, to see who the best players are, to determine who they're going to hire, to find a, you know, to scout for new hires.
Right.
What does this tell you about the notion of investment in capitalism, people, you know, what the speculative nature, whether one should, whether the West anymore, Western economies have any interest in developing industry or capitalism, or what does it suggest to you?
Well, they don't have any interest in developing industry or capitalism, and you're heading into the casino gulag, as I've been talking about for a couple of years. There's only one way left now to break out of subsistence clicking on the web, where you're clicking on ads for a ham sandwich, and that's to basically enter the casino and to play poker or any of these other casino games in the hopes of making a few $100 or a few $1,000 so you can afford something other than a ham sandwich. And if you're really good at it, of course, all that data is now sent to investment banks on Wall Street who will pick you off and say, come to work with us, and we will allow you to trade not in increments of $50 and $100, but $50 million and $100 million. And if you can make consistently winnings of 10 to 20%, you know, you give you a big bonus at the end of the year. And that's a huge feeder network. So you've got millions of people playing poker who are trying to break out of subsistence clicking for a living in the casino gulag in the hopes that they'll be, you know, sent upstairs to the major leagues for Goldman or J.P. Morgan, and doing the exact same thing but with larger sums of money. And I wrote a story about this a couple of years ago about a broker who had reprogrammed his computer so that there was a fish tank on the screen that overlaid a online casino game. And what he had was his cat would interact with the screen, and with the paw, it would play with the virtual fish, but unbeknownst to the cat, it was making bets in the online casino, and the cat turned out to, by interacting with these virtual fish, was making these successful bets in the online casino, and the cat was making millions and millions of dollars a year, and the entire firm, in fact, was subsidized by this kitty cat who was interacting with the virtual aquarium as a result of some quirk in the wiring of the cat's brain and the program and the casino that allowed for this aberration to appear, where money is essentially being printed at the whim of freak algorithms and uncanny kitty cats.
But I also think the story about them hiring, looking for the best online poker players suggests what we've seen in the witness in the last few years in the financial markets is that it's all about playing the players, and you risk a lot. You'll keep on doubling up the ante, you know, meeting their call and raising them, and bluffing. Everybody's bluffing until everybody loses everything. So that's kind of what you could look at AIG and the credit default swap system as being, is everybody was playing the players. Somebody was waiting for the other to fold.
Yeah, well, okay. And then you hit exactly right, up until the year 2000. And then you hit peak credit. Then the game ended, which created a global deflationary spiral. But within the global deflation, you've got a sub story, a B story going on, where people are eking out inflationary gains by playing the online poker or the Wall Street poker or the Wall Street gambling casino to make incremental gains, which are used to manipulate markets like food and energy. And so people have the illusion that prices are going up and that there's inflation at the cash register, because that's the result of the gamblers gambling with each other and causing fake inflationary pressures. But within the overall trend, which is peak credit and global collapse.
Yeah, but you could also look at the eve of the French Revolution. There was a deflationary collapse with lots of inflation. The central government, there was a deflationary collapse. They had lost all their gold in financing the American Revolution and in the extravagance of the court. And then what happened? The lords and the minions of the court and the church had to start raising massively the tolls and actually putting a more toll booth for the lower classes and the peasants to have to pay. So their costs were going up. The cost of wheat skyrocketed partly with a bad weather, but also because of this situation of having to be squeezed by the, again, it's like that trillionaire versus billionaire, or last year it was billionaire versus millionaire. Back then it was the same thing.
Yeah. So you've got companies who are experiencing balance sheet collapse, who are drug companies, and the way that they're making this up is to charge more for drugs.
Exactly.
Now, does that mean inflation or deflation?
The same thing with the credit card companies or the banks. They've had a deflation and collapse in their own balance sheets, and what do? They've raised the interest on peasants to 30%.
Right. Is that inflation or deflation?
It's inflation for the peasant. It's deflation for the banks.
Right, but the bigger trend is deflation.
The bigger trend, yeah.
So that's the unified inflation-deflation theory. And the same thing, whether it's food or energy, drugs, healthcare, or credit at the banks.
Well, I think you should look at it back to one of your original statements or theories, is that we live in neo-feudal times. So it's more like feudalism, where each layer of now it's a trillionaire, billionaire, millionaire, and mere, somebody with lots of debt. You're in a different class.
Also,
and get squeezed by those above you.
Also, you've got guaranteed deflation in the form of the Afghanistan war, the Iraq war, in that you've got the Pentagon, who takes 50% of all the tax dollars collected in America and throws it into a big hole in Eurasia. That's deflationary.
Yeah.
You don't get any productive use out of it.
I was thinking about this this war, America's Pentagon stuff. It's very strange how America, more than any nation on earth, is like violently against this notion of socialism for the non-trillionaire class. And yet the government spending on wars and the military just increases. And the non-trillionaire class will egg it on as much as well. They don't mind government spending on war, which is one of the most non-productive. I mean, I suppose it is productive if you take resources.
Well, because, yeah, go ahead.
But as you and I worked out, I mean, the $2 trillion spent on Iraq, you could have bought most of their oil for that amount.
That's correct. You could have simply cut a check to Iraq for $2 trillion or $3 trillion and just bought their oil.
And that would have been an honest exchange rather than socialism.
Yeah, and get them 10% of the revenues. They would have been richer than they've ever been in 100 years. And America would have been energy secure for another 50 years.
The other story I was looking at in the Herald Tribune today is, regarding Iraq, is there have allegedly been $53 billion worth of reconstruction done in Iraq. And now they have these, they have this brand new hospital in Baghdad. They also have this new children's hospital that is supposed to be ready within the next year. But somebody, we don't know who, assassinated all of the educated class. Remember, they assassinated so many doctors and lawyers, which works great, to have a non-thinking, non-intellectual class. Like, you wipe out the entire intellectual class, and you don't have, if you want to run that country and you want to steal their resources, it's a good thing to do. But because they have all these new hospitals, they don't have any doctors to man them because they've all been killed.
Yeah. Well, speaking about the educated class, it's really funny in California, all these universities now are out in the street protesting the rate hikes for tuition at the USC system, the UC system.
University of California and Cal State universities, yeah.
Yeah, across the country, you've got rate hikes for tuition in universities. And
a 32% rise in the price of tuition at the UC system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, that's another example of inflation perceptions masking the deflationary problem. But beyond that, also, I have no sympathy for the students whatsoever. As a matter of fact, I laugh in their face because 3 years ago, 5 years ago, when the U.S. was invading Iraq during Shock and Awe of 2003, all the college students and all the college universities were out there shouting down the protesters and shouting down the resistors and those who were fighting against it. And they were not in force protesting the wars that now, because of the cost of these wars, they are not being allowed to be educated anymore. So their time of resistance and protest was 5 years ago. They were bought off like every other of these minions from the corporocracy, and now they're losing their education. But it's really the shame on them. They caused it for themselves.
Well, they didn't stand up to it. It was the students who were monitoring classes at UCLA to look for liberal bias in the professors. Okay, now this tuition rise in the UC system means that they're also laying off thousands of faculty, teachers, professors. But what are they doing? They're increasing, in the same exact tuition hike, they're increasing the pay and pensions of the administrators, the neo-feudal class. It's like that trillionaire versus billionaire versus millionaire class. It's the same thing as neo-feudalism. So many of the students were making sure that you didn't have any progressive politics there. You weren't telling the peasants that they could possibly rise up or have a better life. Mm-hmm. So this is the result of, you know, it is a very, very well orchestrated neo-feudal campaign. So yeah, I mean, I guess they should have realized that in neo-feudalism, there is no discernment. Just because you have an American accent and an American citizenship and you're, you know, a white person in America, they assume that for some reason that they wouldn't be part of this, the global peasant class. You wouldn't have to be paying all these tolls all over the place to administrators and politicians and contractors and the likes of that.
Yeah, well, you know, in the 60s, there was economic growth in the U.S., but the students were willing to put aside careers milking the system to fight for what they thought was right. And in the 90s and the double zeros, there was this credit boom that fueled GDP expansion, but there was incredible social injustice that was going on, and the students chose not to fight against it, but to just benefit from it as best that they could. And now they're getting the result of their bad karmic choices. So I really have no sympathy for them. The education system, like the economy itself, has to be squashed down to bricks and the Stone Age to rebuild from scratch, because there's nothing of value left to it. This generation is unfortunately gone. Now, moving right along, on MaxKaiser.com, we've had many interesting stories to report to you. And, Stacy, why don't you tell the people about a couple of those interesting stories?
What is the story? Well, there's one story that's been, in the Daily Mail has been covering it, and that's all these tankers off Cornwall filled with oil. But they're saying the oil speculators are refusing to ship it back onto shore for us to use because they refuse to sell it at this price. They want a higher price for it.
Well, it's a lie.
What's the lie? Tell us about it,
Those
Max.
Those tankers are filled with pasties.
Well,
Cornwall is known for pasties. Cornwall is the pasty capital of the world. There's been many songs written about pasties, chicken and mushrooms in particular. And those tankers are out there trying to make off with Cornwall's prized possession of Cornwallian pasties.
But on a serious note, the we have been covering this since earlier this year when we had the Oracle, where we talked about this contango as it was happening. In February of
the last contango in Cornwall. I saw that story, the Marlin chicken and mushroom.
In February, you could buy a barrel of oil for $30.
Yeah, I tried to.
And even at that point, you know, oil trading now was at $80. So they could rent a tanker and still make a lot of money for it, despite renting the tanker and storing that oil at $30. They were forward selling it to $80. So, you know, maybe who knows what the story is about these tankers off Cornwall, because maybe they already have a contract to sell and to deliver this oil in December or January.
Well, again, it's not allowing the market to clear at prices that represent full transparency. So it's not free market capitalism. It's command and control socialism in a country that claims to be capitalistic, Britain. They're not. It's not capitalistic. It's command and control, centralized government planning of the price of energy, the price of money through the Bank of England, and every other price out there. They're encourage war profiteering. And the only good thing to happen in the UK in the last week was that it looks like the final nail in the coffin for Tony Blair's bid to become EU president has been placed.
Well, it's over. Yeah, they've already selected. It's the new president of the EU is some center-right guy from Belgium, I think, or Luxembourg.
I can't believe it. I thought that zombie vampire ghoul would rise up from the dead somehow and get that job.
Well, apparently, according to the papers I read today, it was because of Angela Merkel. Mm-hmm. She called Tony Blair twice and told him that he can't lobby for it. It had to go to a center-right person, not somebody from allegedly center-left.
Oh, my God. Well, I guess that means his dossier over at J.P. Morgan will be full again. He'll be globetrotting around the world, cutting deals for the banksters.
Well, he's not going to get his pay rise.
No,
like if you don't have a government position to take the authority to take money from taxpayers, then what good are you to J.P. Morgan?
Well, that's the good question. Maybe he should be fired then from J.P. Morgan because he's fallen out of the crony class. You know, if you can't get these world leaders on the phone and get them bullying them to buy a few hundred billion worth of J.P. Morgan mortgaged, packaged, collateralized falafel sandwich bonds, you know, what good is he?
Yeah, but, you know, with this J.P. Morgan paying Tony Blair $2 million a year, like, I'm just amazed that I have never seen any sort of investigation by any British press about this.
Mm-hmm.
Because unless he goes to an office, does he go to an office there? Does he actually work there?
He goes to a hot tub.
Or are they just giving him $2 million? And then doesn't that suggest, like, it's something weird or corrupt or possibly unsavory about it? It doesn't seem quite right.
Well, there's nothing right about either Tony Blair or J.P. Morgan or Jamie Dimon, the CEO, or anyone who works over there are the products that they sell. There's nothing right about any of it.
Okay.
There's nothing right about it. There's nothing right about it. Tony Blair is, but the question is, where is he going to pop up next? Is he going to be on a reality TV show? Is he going to be, you know, because he loves being in the, is he going to start debating Bill Clinton and George Bush on some kind of crazy tour of the three amigos? Traveling around the world, spreading their insidious, vile gossip about world leaders and policies that they supposedly were involved with that did something other than good but were actually bad. And what's he going to do now? Is he going to be...
I like the Three Amigos idea because I did see some sort of headline that Bill Clinton is going to debate George Bush.
Yeah, well, those guys are desperate to get back on TV.
You know, nobody wants to listen to him anymore.
The, you know, Barack Obama, he's photogenic, so he took away all, you know, all the cameras are snapping on him. Even this Shiksa, Sarah Palin, gets more TV time than Bill Clinton. And she's never even done anything in government aside from a part-time gig in some Alaska governorship. Yeah, I talked to a guy here in Paris, okay? This is the mentality. This guy, he works in the U.S. He works in California. And Sarah Palin came up, and he's like, well, you know, this is his defense of Sarah Palin. This is why he believes in the Sarah Palin. This is everything revolves around this one point. He said, well, you know, she had that baby, even though she knew it was retarded, okay? That was, therefore, she's a woman of high moral character. And that's her qualification for being in a public office.
No, well, I was saying that I hope she gets nominated for the Republican ticket because I think it will be the very first celebrity nomination to, I mean, truly, like, especially since she's not in any politics. You know, she's not in office for all these years. And she was governor of Alaska for 2 years.
Bush put in a law that he could say anybody was enemy combatant, and he could throw him into a legal black hole in a dungeon for as long as he wanted to.
Uh-huh.
Now, when Barack Obama became president, we assumed that he would overwrite that rule and reverse that rule, but he has not. That rule is still on the books. The president of the United States can say any American anywhere in the world is an enemy combatant and needs to be confined to a dungeon for an indeterminate length of time. Now, imagine that power to Sarah Palin, who would say to Michael Moore, or some celebrity, other celebrity, that, you know what, I don't like the way you're looking at me. You're an enemy combatant, and you must go and live in the dungeon. And by law, she can do that now.
Well, I think that's good, though. I think that I think it should be more extreme. I think the U.S. should look more extreme, because with, you know, too many people like Obama, and I think, you know,
you remember 9/11? Remember, there's a day called 12/11. That's the day, the year before 12/12, when Magna Carta came on. What was it, 12/12? This is the year before Magna Carta. You can't have a king or despot say, you're bad, go to the dungeon.
But that's what I really think. It should be more extreme. It should be more overt and aggressive and open, I think. Right now it's just too, I don't know, you know, too many people, especially internationally, like Obama. And for some reason, Democrats bombing nations, and at least, as long as they feel bad about it, it is apparently okay. Anyway, so going back to this oil off of Cornwall.
Yeah.
What do you think the answer is to this oil?
It's really something that Cornwall has all of this oil off their coast, and it is market manipulation, and I'm sure it will be resolved. Now, who do we have on next week? We've got us again, of course.
On our shows, The Kaiser Report and On the Edge. You know, yeah. we started... The Kaiser Report for Russia Today last week. And we had on as a guest Danny Schechter, the news dissector, talking about the crime of our time, the financial collapse as a crime scene. This week coming up, we have Der Spiegel journalist Ulrich Feichner talking about Afghanistan and a bit about Iraq. And we have Greg Hunter from USAWatchdog.org up on the Edge.
That sounds very edifying. So until then, this is Max and Stacy saying to you at Residence, bye, y'all!